Coming up on this episode of DL Weekly, more Celebrate Soulfully information. Fantasmic is getting ready to return, as is another New Orleans Square favorite.
Avengers Campus gets a small upgrade. The Rescue Rangers are meeting and greeting. We talk about the Disneyana event and more. DL Weekly starts now.
Well, hello there. Welcome to our unbirthday party. For your safety, please be sure to stay listening with your hands, arms, feet, and ears inside the podcast. And please, do give Peg and Teresa easier trivia questions. Well, it seems DL Weekly is about to begin. Have a most wonderful time. Perhaps tea time.
Hello and welcome to this episode of DL Weekly for the week of May 25th, 2022. I'm Teresa Urban.
And I'm Teg Bushman. We're going to send a shout out and a big thank you to Sheena B., Diana D., and Amanda S. for becoming official weekly tiers on our Patreon. Our supporters get some pretty nice perks like some DL Weekly swag, bonus content, access to our Discord community, and more. We just had a community hangout last week that went really well, where we all got on Zoom and just chatted about stuff for a little over an hour, so that was a lot of fun. Well, if you would like some more Disney magic in your day, head on over to dlweekly.net/support to join the community.
In episode 222, we spoke to Debbie and Steve with Designer Park Company about their brand new rope drop bag. If you have been wanting to get one of these park goer bags for yourself, you can use our promo code DLWeekly to get 10% off your purchase at designerparkco.com. Side note, Debbie's actually in Disneyland right now.
Oh, is she?
Having like a total ball of a time. She's been sharing all sorts of stories on her Instagram, and it looks fun. Looks like that bag's coming in handy, too. I can't wait until I get mine.
Now let's get to the news.
To celebrate the return of Celebrate Soulfully and the Festival of the Lion King this summer, some new treats are going to be available to guests. Some of the items include chicken coconut curry sweet potato and the Pride Rock Punch at Troubadour Tavern, or the Peaches and Cream Funnel Cake over at Award Wieners in DCA. Outside of the parks, the GHC Craftsman Bar at the Grand Californian will offer jerk seasoned beef tenderloin skewers and coconut shrimp with raspberry rum sauce. I think they mean raspberry yum sauce because that sounds delicious.
How do you feel about they also are going to have a cardamom cold brew?
I'm excited.
I don't think it'll be there when we're there next, but maybe.
I don't know if it will or not, because the stuff at the Troubadour Tavern, I'm curious because, right, the Troubadour Tavern, as we all know, is right next to the theater where Festival of the Lion King is going to be playing. So I'm curious if this is like the new menu to kind of to be more in tune with that show versus just what did it have before, like baked potato. I mean, the Troubadour Tavern wasn't themed to the show. I think that's really fun that it's themed now. I think that's really exciting. So does that mean that it's staying that way or is that temporary? Unfortunately, Disney Parks blog didn't tell us that.
Right.
I kind of feel like it'll stay there. Maybe they'll switch some things out, but I think it's going to be a more unique dining location than it had been in the past.
By the way, we keep saying Festival of Lion King. It's Tale of the Lion King, so I apologize for that. I feel like it used to be called Festival of the Lion King, but now it is Tale of the Lion King. So for me, first of all, I am a terrible Disneyland expert in air quotes. Troubadour Tavern, I was like, where is Troubadour Tavern? I was racking my brain because I don't think I've ever purchased anything from there.
I have been wanting, and now it's no longer on the menu. They have these these baked potatoes that, of all the foods to purchase in Disneyland, I never got a baked potato from the Troubadour Tavern.
Sure.
But it was one of those, like, one of these trips, I just had this weird want to try a Disneyland baked potato for whatever. I don't know why. But every time that we were back there and I'd remember about it, I wasn't hungry or we were just about to eat something or whatever.
Or it was closed.
Or it was, yes. Something always prevented me from eating that. But so, yeah, so I don't know. I've had things from Troubadour Tavern, but the one thing that I always, like, that stuck in my mind was the baked potato that is no more. But these look really interesting. For me, I think the thing that probably sticks out the most to me, I would want to try the salted plantain chips.
Yes. I was just looking at that.
Maybe the chicken at coconut, the chicken coconut curry sweet potato. Right now, yep. I wouldn't want to eat that with it. What's going into the summer season? That seems like a more like a fall or a cold. It's like a cold weather sure. food. It seems like a comfort food to me.
Mm-hmm.
But those desserts look yummy. Of course, we have a new macaroon. What is
an actual macaroon?
A coconut macaroon, pineapple orange thumbprint, like a cookie, and then a butter chocolate chunk cookie. Mm-hmm. That also looks yummy, too.
Yeah. Some of this food looks really good. I'm very excited. Hopefully something will be around still when we're there in September. But it look, you know, they got some good stuff. This foot-long barbecue pulled pork dog at Award Wieners also seems like a lot. I will say I was a little disappointed when we went to Award Wieners on our last trip because they don't have a standard hot dog bun anymore. It's this kind of like bread that they cut in half, which was fine, but I kind of wanted a hot dog bun. So, and this barbecue, this footlong barbecue pulled pork dog is the same thing. It's a toasted bun putting inside.
It's almost like think of like it like a piece of garlic bread, minus,
like a piece of Texas toast that they cut
Texas
in half.
Toast,
and
that's a better way of saying garlic bread than
garlic
bread minus the garlic and the butter.
Well, I feel like you're going to be excited about this because you like all these type of strange drinks. For those weekly tiers who can't make it to the parks for the Pride Rock Punch, you're in luck. The Disney Parks blog posted the recipe so you can make this thirst-quenching beverage at home. With just 8 ingredients and a few minutes of time, you can make this at home for 4 to 6 people or 4 to 6 servings if you aren't sharing.
It sounds interesting. So the ingredients are fresh pineapple, unsweetened black tea, mango beverage syrup, orange juice, tamarind paste, orange slices, dried mango slices, and dried pineapple. I'm assuming the orange slices and the dried fruit is more of a garnish. It sounds interesting, though.
Mm-hmm. Like I said, I thought this would be like right up your alley because it's you love these type of things. Well,
especially,
the paradise that we're drinking right
especially
now.
Especially when they're like fruity, refreshing drinks. I'm all about it. Yeah.
What did you have this last time that you were really about? Wasn't there something that you had that was really good?
The Pim Particle Punch.
Yes. With that, like the
Pop Rocks.
Pop Rocks in it.
Mm-hmm.
And that
it was
wasn't,
fun.
That wasn't, I tasted it, I think, didn't I? Yeah.
You did.
But the Pop Rocks for you weren't a turnoff.
No, they were actually really fun with that drink. Yeah.
That's good.
Well, Fantasmic fans rejoice. The return of the biggest nighttime spectacular is just a few days away as we record this episode. Most of the infrastructure has been updated and refurbished to get everything show ready, and the work on the pathways along the riverfront are wrapping up as well. We can't wait to see how the show looks after its long hibernation since COVID.
I talked about the pathways along the riverfront. I feel like I'm opening a can of worms with you because aren't very a big fan of it.
Not.
It's not bothering me necessarily as much. I am hoping upon hope that they have like updated the show a little bit because I really want the Peter Pan segment to come back to the ship, but I don't know if that's going to happen. But I did find myself last week watching the new version of Fantasmic, mm-hmm. which I'm not as familiar with. I think I've only actually seen that version once, maybe twice.
Really?
Yeah, I've seen the original one so much. Yeah. So when I watch it, my brain gets confused because I'm so used to the original that when I watch this one, it throws me like through a loop because I was showing it to Max after we got back. I said, look at this cool thing because I was talking about Gardner Holt and doing Murphy. Mm-hmm. And I was just kind of sad because I was like, oh, this, like, even the music is kind of scored a little differently in certain places. And I was like, this isn't the show I remember. It's still a great show, though. Don't get me wrong. But I'm hoping that they update it again a little bit, I guess, if they've done all this work for it. And the one in Florida, they said that they've done a bunch of work and they've replaced the Pocahontas scene with like a whole new scene that they're going to have. So there is hope, I suppose.
Maybe. I haven't heard any rumors of them changing anything to ours, but Maybe they kept it really under wraps. Who knows? We will find out in just a couple of
days. By the way, remind
days.
Me. So in our chat, somebody was talking about the cast member or the media preview or something mm-hmm. at what, like 2 a.m. or 1 a.m. or some crazy.
So the cast member one is like 1 a.m.
Right.
But the
on Friday
media.
Or Thursday.
I think it's after
Star Wars night, right?
Star Wars
on the 27th.
Night. So probably
that's Friday.
So I don't know if it's. I guess I don't know if it's 1 a.m. on Friday or if it's 1 a.m. on Saturday.
Well, technically, I think it's 1 a.m. Saturday morning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it was 1 a.m. for cast members, and then 3 a.m. for the like the press or the media preview.
Oh, wow. Could you imagine 3 a.m.?
I would be a pumpkin. I would be a smashed, moldy, cranky pumpkin.
Would you, though? Like, I feel like your excitement for Fantasmic would
wake
you up.
I think it'd be tough because you'd have to wake up and get yourself to the park at, like, 1, 2 a.m.
Sure.
Versus just being in the park and, like, having that excitement build. That would be the hard part.
Sure. Sure.
Yes, would I be super excited? Oh, yeah. But it still would be a little bit of a challenge, I think. Yeah, we won't talk about my thoughts on the ground.
Pathways. Well, I'm really excited for Fantasmic to come back. And it is the last nighttime spectacular that needs to come back. And now we will be good. And then we can bring back some of the smaller entertainment. And then we'll be back to almost normal.
Okay, one thing I have to say about the ground.
Oh, here we go.
We
almost made it, folks.
The thing that I have such a hard time with, A, it's not themed. It feels very generic. But B, the thing that's really bothering me now is it looks kind of like a big old patchwork quilt because there's different things that have been poured at different times. So they're like slightly different colors, it's not up to what I would say is the normal Disney standard.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's so heartbreaking about it.
Do you want to know what bothers me about it? It's kind of like what you're saying. Their little half circle swoops reminds me of the Mickey and Friends parking garage.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't think the ground of the parking garage should be the ground of New Orleans Square.
No, I think they missed it big on that. I wish they would have done some sort of ground theming.
Yeah.
Groundscaping, whatever you want to call it.
We don't talk about this week, but I did just see right before recording that the Tarzan's treehouse stump is almost all gone now. But I wanted to mention it on the show that it is that because we have talked about it for a couple weeks now, and it is like,
well, it's
pretty much gone.
It's down. We should clarify.
Sure.
It's down so that it's not sticking up over the construction walls anymore. We don't know if it's truly gone down to the ground. The construction walls are still around it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we're not going to go there either because I'm not very happy about that.
Teresa's just very displeased with this area of Disneyland at the moment.
I feel like they're stripping away a layer of the charm of the area, because the one thing that I think was really nice about that extra stump, yes, I understand that it was taking up some space and maybe hindering crowd flow, but it helped with the whole sightline thing, right?
Sure.
When you were in Adventureland, you were in Adventureland, and that tree helped make it feel more like jungly.
Yeah.
Now without it there, it's just this big old open straight shot, and you can see the Dream Suite, you can see New Orleans Square and all that stuff. You don't feel like you're you don't feel quite as tucked in this corner of the park as you had been. So that makes me sad.
Do you know what else? Okay, we have gone way off the rails this time. But something else I saw somebody talking about today that is related to all of this is, we forgot about this, or at least I did. Magic bands are coming at some point, and so I'm very excited for that. No news or updates on that, but I forgot that was coming, so I'm excited for whatever that entails. Well, a few episodes ago, we talked about the possible value of the Tomorrowland Skyline Lounge, where guests can book a spot to have some goodies and watch the fireworks from the top section of the Star Wars launch bay. For $60, guests can come and go as they please from the lounge and are treated to an entree, side, and dessert with unlimited assorted beverages. Food is ordered from the Galactic Grill upon check-in and then brought into the lounge by the guests. So basically, you're going up to the counter, you're ordering your food, you're carrying it up there. A badge and lanyard is also provided, which lets you go in and out for the rest of the evening. And giant games are also on hand to keep everyone occupied. What do you think about this?
I must have skipped the part about grabbing your food at Galactic Grill and walking it across Tomorrowland to then go up to the... Yeah, I missed that part.
Yep, right there.
Yeah.
You got to walk it up to the lounge yourself.
I missed that. Yeah, totally missed that part. I was just excited about all the photos, so I did a very poor job of reading, so my apologies. That takes away a little of the magic for me. I thought that you got it when you were up there, or they delivered it up to you.
This came from the Disney Food Blog we have linked in our show notes. They said that it's not easy to get. First of all, there's quite a walk to get
with
up
this
there
now, because I was all like, I thought this sounded like a pretty fun thing that maybe we should check out sometime. But now, Now I've gone a few steps backwards on that.
Yeah, I thought so too, because I was thinking when I saw this, I was like, oh, good, this will tell us what the food situation is, because I thought that you would order something and they would like bring it to your table.
Right, or they had it somewhere up, even if you had to just walk up and get it, you know, pick it up there, that'd be fine too. So let's focus on the positive, because I feel like I've been very negative.
Caught off guard with this.
Well, no, just I feel like I've been quite negative with recently in the show. But so we do know what the menu is now. So the menu, the entrees that you can choose from, there's three. You get a choice of one entree, a dessert, and a beverage. The entrees, there's a meaty or sandwich. Ha, see what they did there. Which is a smashed meatloaf with space sauce, onion aioli, hash browns, arugula, and Havarti on a brioche roll, served with a choice of seasoned fries or pasta salad. There's also a chicken star masan. See what they did there. Sandwich, which is a breaded chicken breast topped with zesty marinara, provolone, herb melody, and pesto aioli on a ciabatta roll, served with seasoned fries or pasta salad. And there's also a supernova pasta bake, which is a blend of broccoli, artichokes, mushrooms, olives, tomatoes, and a chef's choice of pasta tossed in the zesty marinara sauce, topped with a dairy-free cheese. So that sounds like it's a vegan
offer. This doesn't sound like nice. $60 to me, I'm just saying.
So, well, before...
And some of this sounds like you could get from Pizza Port. Alien Pizza Planet. Why would you not get it from right next door to where you can go up on this instead of the Galactic Grill?
But remember when this was a thing, you didn't get a meal and it was still like 50 or $60.
It was a dessert party, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so. And then you do get a choice of seasonal dessert for the dessert. So this seemed kind of fun. I think it'd be an interesting way to view the fireworks. Probably... If I were to do this, it would be probably a do it once thing just to experience it. But I think it would be cool to watch the fireworks from this view.
Did you also read, I'm guessing you didn't, that they don't pump music up there either?
I think I knew that from before.
Yeah, so you can hear it off in the distance.
Yep, I think that was one of the complaints from before.
Why would they not pump music up there? I feel like they could put some DJ speakers or something up there.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know.
For me... The idea of being up on that second floor and that view, even if it's not the fireworks, even if it's just to like look over Tomorrowland, I think would be really cool. That's about where it ends for me. I don't think it's worth $60. I don't think the food is a great choice. I don't like carrying the food over there. The idea that you can come and go back and forth, I guess, is fine. Just not very exciting. Like, I feel like this could be something really cool, but I feel like it's like they gave the intern the job, like, for day one, like, make a thing. And then they did it, and that's what we got.
I don't know. Well, moving on to happier tides. Guests who are seeking adventure and salty old pirates won't have to wait too much longer. The Pirates of the Caribbean attraction is not listed on the refurbishment calendar after July 1st, so it could open around that time. Disney has not announced an official date, and there are no dining reservations offered for the Blue Bayou restaurant for that time either, but with any luck, guests will be celebrating the 4th of July with the swashbuckling pirates.
I'm very excited for pirates to come back now.
Me too.
I do want to hang my head in shame and admit something today.
Do you have to? We've had such a negative podcast.
I know.
Save it for another time.
So there was a question today in our Discord chat that was, what is an attraction that you feel like you go on more for nostalgia than you actually like enjoying it? And I thought really hard because I feel like there was a good answer there. And I was thinking about pirates. And I feel like... I go on it because I it's like the thing you do, but I'm like thinking of the different aspects of it. And I'm like, there's nothing in there that I'm like, wow, or so cool. It's just kind of like, I always do it, so I always do it.
See, I'm different. Even though maybe it's not the most like technologically advanced or the most like keeping you on the edge of your seat or thrilling attraction, it's like the Haunted Mansion. Like, it's still tons of fun because there's just so much to look at, so much going on, so many different details, so many different layers. So I really like just soaking it all in and looking at all that stuff. Especially the more I learn about the history of some of these things, the more and more interesting it is. Case in point, I have such a bigger appreciation for Small World than I had in the past because of learning all the history and all the coolness that goes behind these things. So, not me for pirates.
I did find
that is not my That's not, yeah. No, I still love pirates.
I did go to the source of this question. It was a Twitter question. And I looked at the comments on Twitter because I was curious. Like, what do people have to say? Pirates was actually on there quite a few times.
Who posted it?
It is, I think it was Disney Food Blog.
The Disney Food Blog.
Yep. And it wasn't today. It was back actually in April is where I found the post. But anyway, you want to know the two that everybody said? Like, were the number one and two, like, comments? Was It's a Small World and Peter Pan.
You know, Peter Pan was the other one that I was slightly thinking of. I do enjoy Peter Pan.
What did you say?
Lincoln. Abraham, Moments with Mr. Lincoln is the one that I chose.
Not great moments, just moments with just Mr. Moments. Lincoln. Yeah.
I was, well, it was.
The nostalgia is the great part.
Yeah.
This is just moments with Mr. Lincoln.
I think what I decided, we're so off topic here. What I decided with that one was I really enjoy the history of that attraction and, you know, everything on that aspect of it. But when I actually go and sit in the theater, it doesn't captivate me as much as I actually like. I enjoy reading and learning about Mr. Lincoln more than I like sitting in the theater.
Well, the other thing, I feel like Lincoln is like Muppet Vision and all those things. It's a film. So you see it once and like the next time you see it, it's the exact same thing again.
Well, I think sometimes I'm also a little over-observant, so then I notice things that then bother me. I'm not going to say it to the universe.
I was going
to
say you have something for Lincoln?
I do. I'm not going to say it to the universe because I don't want to point
things. I'll cut it from the podcast, but I want to know.
I don't want to point things out to people that maybe they didn't notice, and then they're going to notice, and I'm going to be like, David,
well, now
Teresa,
I want to know.
He doesn't sit on the chair. It drives me bonkers.
He doesn't sit on the chair?
He doesn't actually sit on the chair.
Oh, my goodness.
He hovers over
I need to
the
watch
chair.
A video of this now. Okay, and then what was your second one? It was Peter Pan.
Yeah, Peter Pan's another one. And I see, this is my thing with Peter Pan. I enjoy Peter Pan.
Mm-hmm.
I will not wait for Peter Pan.
Sure.
It's not.
What do you think
worth
it is? Is it because you're hanging from the ceiling? It's different
than
the other dark rides?
Because you're hanging from the ceiling and you're looking down on everything instead of looking, you know, out. Left, right, and out.
Okay.
I think that's why I enjoy it. But it's just a very short attraction, so it's very difficult for me to do like the 30 to 40 minute.
Yeah.
And above weight on it.
Yeah, I like the hanging aspect. There's something that just is cool about hanging above stuff. Maybe Disney needs to make more hanging dark rides.
My favorite room is probably the like least technologically advanced room.
And what's that one?
That's when you're flying over Neverland and you're in the dark and like.
Neverland's, oh, I like that room
that's
too.
That's my favorite part of
with
it.
With the stars?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like the first half of that attraction is the best part of that attraction for me. After I get to
once
Neverland.
Once you go past Neverland.
Yeah,
then
it's okay. But the first part of that attraction is the best.
Well, something that Avengers Campus has been missing since its opening last year is more shade and seating. Disney has listened, and some cover tables and chairs have been installed next to the Avengers headquarters.
I feel like a terrible person this week. I was a little disappointed in this, in fact. Because
this is a downer episode. Just so you guys know, our discussion topic is a very upper.
It's very upbeat. It's very upbeat and very happy. So we've got both ends of the spectrum here. This was such a cool way to like enjoy and look at the building there with the Quinjet, and it makes me sad that it's kind of become a food court. I get that we're utilizing space and 100% shade is needed and seating is needed in the area, but it just takes away from the idea of being this an active campus for the Avengers for me. So it actually takes away from the story for me is my thing. And just think of all the super cool photos that you've seen of people standing in front of the building, like their superhero poses.
And now you've got chairs.
You've got chairs and umbrellas and stuff behind you. So,
but what do you care more about? Do you care more about like the cool pictures, or do you care more of like being able to find a seat and being in the shade?
Well, I've not had an issue finding a seat in Avengers Campus because we usually just go over to the overflow seating for PIM is what I'm going to call it. But the Hyperion, what used to be the Hyperion waiting area is now that big. I mean, that's a large, large area with lots of chairs.
And shade.
And it's nice because it's quiet and it's kind of tucked in a corner. So even though these do have umbrellas, it doesn't look super shady to me.
That's true.
So I've never had an issue. So my advice to you is if you are going to Avengers Campus, make sure you do a good lap around PIM. To make sure that there's, you know, nothing open in the PIM test kitchen area, but also walk over to the other side of Guardians Because I think a lot of people forget that there's that extended seating area on the other side of Guardians as well.
I think that's fair.
So this amazing movie came to Disney Plus last week, and the reviews have been pretty positive. Guests can now meet the stars from that movie at Disney California Adventure. Chip and Dale from the new Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers are appearing at the entrance to Hollywoodland to the left of the Hyperion Theater for meet and greets. The crime-fighting duo are dressed in their classic outfits from the TV show.
Did you watch this yet?
I haven't.
So I watched it in two... I had to start it, right? So I watched it in two pieces.
Okay.
And I thought it was very good. Man, I tell you, I feel like you have to go over this. So remember when you saw potentially Bruno in the background of Encanto?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So imagine that in like every freaking scene in this movie, because there are so many Easter eggs in this movie. Every scene in this movie, there's something going on in the background. And there was one that was pointed out in our chat that I was like, no, that can't possibly be there, which is Dobby.
Oh, yeah.
Dressed like he's like a Gucci model in the background, and it's Dobby. It was very people saying it's like Roger Rabbit. It is, because there's characters from other places in this.
Interesting.
And I was like, what the heck? Although I was very sad, because not a spoiler, I'm gonna say at the end of the movie, so people are gonna be like, oh, it's a spoiler, but it's not. At the end of the movie, they're talking about the original theme song, and they're like, yeah, we should hire some like cool rapper person to do like a cutting edge version of it, even though everybody just wants to hear the original. And then they have like the cutting edge rap version for the credits, and I was like, just give me the original. But I thought it was a very good movie. I'm very excited to see Chip and Dale. It was one of my favorite cartoon, like after school cartoon things when I was a kid. You don't have anything to say about... Did you ever watch Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers?
No, Chip and Dale was... That was before my time. My thing, like, my childhood was Tailspin growing up. Like, that's the Disney cartoon.
Did you miss Tailspin in the parks? Tailspin was in the parks in the early 90s.
Tailspin in the parks, because remember my first trip was 2000.
Yeah. Yeah, because they had the Disney Afternoon Avenue back by It's a Small World. Anyway. For those of you who have watched Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers when you're younger, or even if you haven't, it's a good movie. I thought there was parts of it that I was going to think was weird or whatever, but it turned out really well. So, highly recommend it. Teresa, hopefully you and Vern get a chance to see it soon. Well, we aren't going to cover this too much until things are finalized, but there is a change being proposed by Disney to its cast members to do away with the points system for attendance issues and move to an occurrence system. Very basically, this will make it easier for Disney to let go cast members with attendance issues and makes working at Disneyland less flexible for the cast members. We'll keep an eye on this and let everyone know when there is an official update.
Psst, Avast there. Here comes seeking questions and long-lost Disney information, eh? Sure, you come to the proper place, but keep a weather eye open, mates, and hold on tight with both hands, if you please. There be squalls ahead, and James and Vern waiting for them what don't answer correctly.
Welcome to Trivia Land. How are we feeling tonight?
Pretty good.
Confidently... worried. I don't know.
Cautiously optimistic.
Yeah, there you
always.
Go. Cautiously optimistic. That sounds better than confidently
optimistically
worried.
Cautious.
There you go.
Sure. All right. So you ready for some of those great listener-submitted questions?
I mean, are they nice?
Let's do it.
You know, I'm excited. I'm seeing a name I haven't seen in a while. I'm seeing some new names, and these are going to be some good stuff. So let's get right into it. Your first question tonight from listener Louise from California. How many Disney and Pixar characters are located in It's a Small World? And what year were they added to the attraction?
I mean, we did an episode on this. I feel like we should
know. It's been since 2017.
You know 2017?
No, it's been since then. Like, I'm going to say... I'm going to say 2018 is when, like, they were added.
I'm going to say 2017, because I felt like it was a lot longer before COVID and everything. I'm going to say 2017. And then, wasn't there, like, I want to say there was something like 17?
Let me think. Let's go through them.
Oh, my goodness.
So...
Vern, I'm going to say 17 before we go through all of this.
So that's 2017?
And 17 characters?
Yes. So all types of 17.
All of your answers are 17.
So you said 17 characters in 2017?
Correct.
Okay, let me write them down.
Now, Teresa is going to make me
17 and 17.
Yeah, but now Therese is looking around.
Does the magic carpet count as a character?
Oh, that's a good
when
question.
When you're watching Aladdin, do you consider the yes. carpet a character?
Yes.
Then I will consider carpet a character for the Small World.
So I wrote down 29, but I feel like that's Ooh. A really weird number.
That feels high.
So I feel like I'm missing someone.
29. That's...
You said characters, right? Not just films?
Characters.
Okay, good. that would be a difference.
I'm sticking with my... Even though now I feel like it's not going to be correct.
So that's 29 in 2018?
I think... I'm thinking 30, because I think I... Who was I just thinking about? Oh, because I think... I skipped. I have Ariel, but I'm pretty sure we also have Flounder. Yeah, I'm going to say 30.
30?
So you're saying 30, say 30 in 2018. All right, so Tag with 17 in 2017 and Teresa with 30 in 2018. Final answers?
Yeah, I think I'm wrong, though, now that Teresa has listed her whole thing. That's okay.
All right. Question number two, submitted by listener Michelle M. While on the Disneyland Train's Grand Circle Tour, you pass by a little shed on your left that is selling shovels and other digging tools. What is the name of that shed?
I assume this is back by the new area...
Behind Frontierland.
By Galaxy's Edge, perhaps?
I don't know. You said it's what, on the left side of the track?
Yeah.
I'm a terrible person and don't ever look that way.
Yeah, because you like to look inside.
I prefer the cars that actually like only face, like don't face the front of the train, that face to the side,
but Teresa,
so my back's to it.
When you do that, you can't see the behind the scenes stuff.
It's true.
Like, I was trying to see into Toontown, but we were on the thing that was showing us to the side. What are those called? There's a name for those. The excursion
side
cars?
Saddles. I don't know.
Okay, so both of you stumped. That's your final answers?
Yes.
The stumped shovels. Yes.
The stumped shovels. That's your final answer.
No.
All right. Question number three, submitted by listener Lori from All Enchanting Ears.
Ooh,
what
you think it's
ear-related? Donald Duck's middle name?
Fauntleroy.
That one. I knew it was something weird like that.
Is that your
if
final
I'm
answer?
If I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Yes, I'm going to go with that, too.
I'm going to put that one as Tag's answer.
Why?
That's what I'm
that's
doing,
that's what
too.
You said.
Oh, that one, in quotes?
Yep.
Okay.
And your last regular round question, submitted by listener Kayla B. In The Haunted Mansion, what is the name of the ghost band in the graveyard?
Had this before. We've had this before. The only thing I can think of is the Phantom Five, and I don't know if that's it or not, but that's all I can think of right now.
The Phantom Five? I don't have an answer. This is a terrible week of trivia, Vern. I'm going to, you know, next year when my Trivia Land annual pass key holder whatever thing is up, I don't know if I'm going to renew.
So that was Phantom Five and that one? Is that your final answers?
Well, no, I didn't even say that one.
Said,
I just said,
I don't know. Getting rid of his trivial answers.
So that was
stumped.
Phantom 5 and that one as your final answers, right?
Sure.
All right. And your bonus question for tonight.
I put a question mark down since he didn't even say that one.
Sure.
What instruments are they playing?
Oh!
We did
have
this question
before.
There's
bagpipes.
Isn't there an accordion? No,
there's,
bagpipes.
A guy's playing, a xylophone. Maybe, and he's playing it with like femurs.
Mm-hmm. Is there like a big horn or something?
Yes, like a big long foam, like those.
Like a vuvuzela?
Yes.
But it's probably not
a
vuvuzela.
Let me think.
Is that it? Or is there one more? Is there a harp? Did we have a harp?
Yes, there's a harp. You're right.
I knew something this week?
One, two, three, four. Good job. Okay, hang on. We're not done. 1, 2, 3, 4. I'm assuming there's five if I'm calling them the Phantom Five.
I knew something this week? I think we should give myself the little
graphic.
Well,
we don't know if it's right or not.
No, but I might have known something. I got to make this much better because this is huge and ridiculous. But for myself,
maybe
bam.
There is like a flute or like a piccolo type thing.
Oh, a flute.
Like a flute or a piccolo.
I feel like this is the banjo all over again. Like, I can see this in my mind, but I'm wondering if I made it up.
We're just gonna
Are
go
you having
it.
A Mandela effect with a banjo?
Yes. Well, you remember when we had that question.
Yeah. Slash piccolo.
This is terrible.
So you're saying a bagpipe, a xylophone made of bones, a flute, a vuvuzela, and a harp?
Yes.
Yes. Vuvuzela slash horn.
Vuvuzela is what it's
vuvuzela
called.
Vuvuzela slash just horn, because
yeah.
Or trumpet.
All right. Well, listeners, how do you think they did? How did you do listening at home? Stick around until after the discussion topic, and we can all find out.
I'm just going to say, spoiler alert, I'm sure that it was not good.
Welcome back, Weekly Tears. This is part two of our recent trip to Disneyland. Now we're going to talk about our time at the Disney Anna seminar and Legends Dinner. And I still have to pinch myself that we got to go experience this because it was so much better than my imagination had it, like what I thought it was going to be. I'm so happy that we were able to travel out and get to do this and meet a lot of really, really cool Disney people.
Yeah. One of our weekly tiers was there and actually kind of has been to these and knew a lot of people. So she was very instrumental in helping us kind of understand what we were in mm-hmm. for. We were beyond excited when we heard about this and we talked to her and she's like, you could lower your expectations a little bit. It's not going to be like D23. But honestly, I thought it was better.
I did too. Like it's not the same scale as D23.
No.
So this happened. So the event was at the DoubleTree Suites by Hilton in Orange, California, which it was like, what, a 7 maybe?
Oh, yeah. It was like two exits down the highway.
Yeah. It was not far from the Howard Johnson at all. So mm-hmm. quick ride over there. So that was nice. But it was just outside of the, you know, the resort area, which mm-hmm. was nice. But it was just, they had a conference room basically is all it was. And it was so cool because instead of it being this massive convention that you've got all sorts of different things going on all at once and you kind of feel like, oh, what do I pick? Because everything sounds amazing. It was just the one room. So
yep.
You didn't miss out on anything as long as you were there, which I really liked.
So I don't want to bury the lead here. I'm just going to tell people we were very excited. Kim and Roy was scheduled to appear at this, and unfortunately she was ill and was very sorry that she couldn't make it. So, you know what? Did not dampen the day because there was enough amazing stuff going on.
And it was really sweet because, I mean, it's Kim Irvine. She's got, I don't even want to know how many different things are going on her plate right now because she's in charge of a lot of different projects around Disneyland. The one main one that comes to mind right now is the Tarzan's Treehouse Reef theme she's working on, in addition to who knows how many other things. But she took the time to write this really sweet note that they then read at the Legends Award dinner mm-hmm. that we had later that evening. And I just thought that was really, really sweet of her and really mm-hmm. something.
Real classy.
She was not able to attend for reasons, and she really wanted to be there. And I just thought it showed really good character that she took the time to put that little note out there to let us all know that she was also disappointed and she looked forward to going, maybe doing it at the next event. But we will back up. So the day started, I want to say we got there at 9 because, again, we're thinking D23, right?
Mm-hmm.
Check-in's at 9:30. We wanted to make sure we got there because D23, you have to line up hours and hours and hours in advance. So we stopped, got coffee. That took a little bit longer than we thought, but we got to the hotel by 9.
Yep.
We walk in. There's probably less than 20 people just sitting, chilling.
I want to tell this story, though, because I'm very excited for this story. We come into the lobby. We're walking in the hallway towards the check-in area. And, you know, there's some people sitting in chairs and kind of lounging and having mm-hmm. about. And there is these two folks in electronic convenience vehicles, mm-hmm. chilling in the middle of the walkway. And I realized as I walk up that the gentleman on the left seemed, from behind, his back was towards us. I was like, is this Bob Gurr? Is he in an electronic wheelchair or electronic convenience vehicle? What is going on here? And it was.
Mm-hmm.
And spoiler alert, so he's working with a company out of Florida to come up with a new design for these convenience vehicles, and during his speech, he talked about how he is doing this. He doesn't need one of these to get around, but he's doing it for like research to know mm-hmm. what it's like to ride in one of these and what are the features that are missing and how do people treat them. And like he had all these stories of going to Disneyland in one of these carts and all of the different ways that people treat people in these cars because like sometimes they're hard to see or they, you know, it's, and it gets busy at Disneyland. It's hard to navigate any wheeled vehicle through. So anyway, lots of cool features he talked about. I just couldn't believe that there he was, this yeah. little scooter, what and he was doing donuts.
Well, and that just gave us a real taste of what we were getting into. Yeah. We walk in, there's only 20 people roughly there, and mm-hmm. one of them happens to be Bob Gurr, who's one of the presenters. I feel like if it were D23, they like shuffle oh, yeah. everyone behind the scenes. You know, you don't just get to have a casual conversation with the
come
people
across
presenting.
Bob Gurr. Yeah,
so it was, I mean, it was super fun. And he was so excited to talk about his designs. And I was actually having a conversation with one of the Disneyana members that was in, that normally uses an electronic convenience vehicle. And kind of, I think it seemed like they were chatting and he was trying to get some ideas and thoughts
oh, yeah.
from her. And I thought that was really, really cool. So we actually got to see Bob Gurr kind of working, which
action,
I mean
yeah.
that was just incredible. So as soon as we walked in and figured like that was our first experience, we're like, this is going to be a real treat. This is going to be so yeah. casual, so low-key, but also just incredible.
I want to say too, the people that were out there that were attendees and the staff of Disneyana, they were all very welcoming and yes. very sweet. You know, we talked to the president mm-hmm. of Disneyana. She was fantastic. We talked to some people that were there. Stephanie kind of explained who some of these folks were. There were some people that have been there since the beginning of this chapter of Disneyana. So really kind of a cool collection of people. And they were also warm and welcoming. I felt like, you know, we talk about our community in the Discord and stuff, I felt like it was kind of a weird extension of that, of, you know, these are some awesome Disney fans that just are all here to celebrate Walt Disney and all that stuff. And it was just fantastic.
It was, you know, yeah, it was really, really amazing. So the first things first was we had to sign in that we, you know, were present, and they kind of did not like a roll call, but they checked you in.
Yep.
We did have to wait a little bit to get into the room, but as soon as the room opened up, it wasn't again this mad dash that you think of when you think of D23 or even like the newest and greatest next amazing popcorn bucket
right.
mad dash for merch kind of feel. It was just casual and just, we'll get there when we'll get there. And really, there wasn't a bad seat in the house.
But we got the front row.
We did. So somehow we just kind of casually walked up and, oh, nobody's taken the front row yet. So we took the front row. So we had an amazing view of everything because we were right there.
Bob Gurr, during his conversation, was standing like 3 feet away from me mm-hmm. the whole time. Mm-hmm. And I did get a chance at one point during his presentation. We'll talk about this in a little bit. But I got to ask him a question. And when he was very good at when he was responding to people, looking at yeah. them and kind of instead of just addressing the room in general, which he did as well. But it was like he was really wanted to tell you your answer to yep. your question. And it was so cool that I asked this question and he was like talking to me about mm-hmm. it. I don't know. I just mm-hmm. never expected it. And he's such an amazing individual. And for 91, man, I'm 41 this year and he's got more energy than I do. So I don't know how he does it, but what an awesome person. They also had an auction in the beginning mm-hmm. when we went in, and they had some pretty cool items there. They had some really good deals on them too.
Yeah, it was a silent auction.
Yeah.
So some of the items that the one item that I kind of like kicked myself because we went and walked the line and looked at everything and mm-hmm. then we were going to go back and put down our bids. They had, you could either do your bids or just a buy it now price. But there was a book by Michael Eisner called Work in Progress, which was sitting out there. And you know, you all know how I am about my Disney books. I actually did not know about this book. So I was just excited to see, you know, like, oh, this looks really great.
Yeah.
And then I'm reading the description. And lo and behold, it's signed. This book is a signed Michael Eisner book that's just sitting there. And I want to say the opening bid was something ridiculously
like
low.
Bucks or something.
Yeah, and the buy it now price I thought was ridiculously low also. So needless to say, when we made our way back around after we looked at everything, it was already gone.
Because
it was, I mean, just amazing. So congrats to the Disneyana fan club member that scooped that up. Cause now
there was
I know.
Some cool stuff.
There was a lot of cool and a lot of different stuff. There was stuff from Club 33. Mm-hmm. There was stuff from the Disney Cruise Lines. There was stuff that was, you know, like older kind of historical kind of collector types of stuff.
There was a postcard in a frame that I thought looked really cool. And I think to like if you were to go to the store and buy a frame and a postcard like this and mat and have a mat around it and everything, you would have paid close to what their like buy it now price was, which was $50. So I went back and I bid for it. I think the starting bid was like $5. And I didn't win it, but it was a pretty cool piece. And they ended up having a similar thing later at one of the other auctions too that was super cool. But
the stuff that was cool about the silent auction stuff that we learned at the one of the first intermissions was that it was all things that had been donated by Disneyana club members, and all of the proceeds that were made went back to the club and were donated to the club. So that's why some of this stuff, I mean, you're never going to find a, say, Michael Eisner signed book for $50. But,
right.
You know, it was kind of an auction to help raise funds for the club.
Mm-hmm. They kind of did a little introduction for their seminar. They kind of did an introduction about Disneyana, and they were very happy that they were back doing this event. Yeah. This is the first event since COVID. So the Disneyana president, Nicolasa, we talked to her. So she welcomed everybody, acted kind of as MC. And then we got Bob Gurr up, they got Terry Harden up. And I didn't really know anything too much about Terry Harden. I knew because we had talked to Stephanie, who hosted a pumpkin carving thing in her backyard for Terry last year, and heard lots of amazing stories. This woman, this Imagineer, she is amazing. She has tons of energy, first of all, and she's been through some stuff in her life, and she still has such a positive attitude and really wants to lift everybody up, which is amazing.
The thing that was just so cool about all of this was that, you know, you kind of forget, we kind of look up to the, you know, we all do. We all look up to people. We all look up to Imagineers and just think, you know, like, whoa. But everybody that was present, you know, Terry, Bob, and we'll talk about Garner Holtz later, that have, you know, have so much to do with the park that we all know and love so, so much. They were the kindest, most down-to-earth individuals. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was just, it was just amazing to me because, you know, they didn't need to be. They could have just come, did their presentations, left. But they all stuck around. They were more than happy to answer questions and just kind of, they were, you could also tell that they were all very, very passionate and genuinely loved what they do and genuinely have a love for, you know, for Disney as well. And just, it was just incredible. But Terry was just tons of fun, tons and tons and tons of fun. We were very excited to get to chat with her later in the evening. We actually became supporters of her Patreon and became part of Terry's tribe, as she calls it. Mm-hmm. Just a really amazing, amazing woman. She has done stuff for Disney. I want to say the first thing she helped with was actually Big Thunder Mountain. Mm-hmm. And she did a lot of sculpting for Disney. So she helped sculpt like the mountains and that sort of things for Big Thunder Mountain. And then her next big project that she did her presentation on, she did other things in between these two, obviously. But since it was Paris's 30th anniversary this year, Terry had a big hand in one of the, I think it was the one of the most, if not the most popular, one of the most popular attractions at Paris, which was the Dragon Slayer. So she talked about what it was like designing that, what it was like working with that, and, you know, all that kind of stuff. It was just a really, really cool story. And then I thought it was really interesting. I mean, I'm not going to do her storytelling justice because she's definitely a storyteller by nature. But basically, she was trying to describe the feeling of going to Paris for the first time and seeing her idea in real life because she was the designer. But due to some, I don't remember exactly what it was, but basically there was some concern in Disney that since she was a woman and at that time she wouldn't be respected. And so they decided not to have her go oversee the actual construction, but she worked very closely with the person that did. So they made sure that they were staying true to what her design was and what her vision was, which I thought was really important. So she didn't get to see it until after it was all completed. And so she was talking about what that felt like to go down there. She was telling a story about how she was, I think she was down in the Dragon's Lair by herself and was just so excited and was getting so emotional about it and asked somebody to take her photo with the dragon and said to them, like, I'm the designer. And they're like, no, you're not. She's like, yes, I am. Why would I just make that up? You know, so anyways, it was kind of this funny back and forth. Just take my picture. If you don't believe me, it's mine. Just take my picture. You know, so anyways, very incredible woman. Very, very excited to hear and learn more of her stories because, yeah, just so much fun.
And for those of you who don't know, Dragon's Lair is under the castle in Paris, mm-hmm. and it is basically the dragon that lives under the castle, and you kind of go through this walkthrough, and the dragon will be sleeping and will wake up and kind of move around and everything. So she, that was kind of all her thing, because originally she was saying in her presentation, they wanted it to be just like a stone dragon. It wasn't going to move or do anything, and she's like, no, it needs to move. Mm-hmm. So she went to bat for this, and I think I remember from her story, because Tony Baxter was the lead for Disneyland Paris,
yep.
that she had this quick, like, she wanted to do this, and they said, no, you know, like, you can't do it. And she's like, well, who do I need to talk to? And she didn't, they were like, Tony Baxter. And she's like, well, who is he? Where can I get to him? And everything. Yeah. And so they eventually, after she pursued it for a while, they said, okay, you got 20 minutes with Tony Baxter to do this presentation. And she got up and she just started rambling faster than I am right now. And Tony was like, okay, if I give you more time, can you slow down? And then he got to the end of it and approved it and said that she had to be the designer on it.
Yeah, so he said, I'll approve it under one condition, that you're the designer and that you lead this. But I mean, she was even talking about different things about how, you know, how she made different movements of how, you know, the dragon's, its tail's going to do this because it's kind of like this animal. It's going to do this because it's like that animal. There is, mm-hmm. I can't remember. I remember there was a lot of cat attributes mm-hmm. to the dragon's movement, but it was really, really interesting to hear the process behind creating this really awesome thing. And that's what everyone talks about too. When they talk about Disneyland Paris, they're like, did you know there's a dragon? Like, everyone gets so excited about the dragon. So even though it's not an attraction in the terms of a ride, it's still really something that people look forward to and something that, like, is such an icon of that park.
Something else that I just want to mention, I don't think there's much for us to say about it beyond what she talked about, but something that seemed very important to her to express as part of her story. She was very good at keeping on time. She was looking at her watch all the time because she was trying to be respectful of everybody. But a lot of her conversation was about her struggle mm-hmm. as, first of all, a female to get into this, but also that she shared with everybody that she's of mixed race. Her mom is white and her dad is black, mm-hmm. and she looks white, but her hair is very, you know, poofy, and it's in dreads now. And that was just something that it was really difficult for her, because people treated her terribly because of that. And so she talked a lot about that, and it seemed to me that it was very important to her, and it was part of, you know, she learned from her father, I think she said, mm-hmm. that you just gotta, you know, that's their problem, basically. Like, you just gotta do your thing and, like, whatever.
You be the amazing person that you are.
And with her supporters and stuff that she's doing on her Patreon, that's how she is now. She made this whole conversation about how everybody who in the audience thinks they're an artist, and like one person raised their hand, and she goes, well, you're all wrong, basically, because no matter what you do, there's art in it. So if you work, you know, whatever you do, there's an art form to it or whatever, and you're all artists, and don't believe otherwise. And the other thing she said that stuck with me was, don't worry about if you don't know how to do something. If the door is open and presents itself to you, step through it. Figure it out later. That was a big thing for her. She talked about a lot was just step through the door and you'll figure it out. Like, it'll work mm-hmm. out. You just gotta have faith. And she's just so amazing and inspiring. And I did not expect that I would feel so inspired by her.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Yeah, so.
And you know, the thing that's really cool is she just kind of lives and breathes this, you know, be yourself mm-hmm. no matter what anyone says or tries to tear you down or any of that. And the thing that's so, I mean, that's powerful.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, in any day and age. But it's just so powerful. And the thing that was really special and really touching was that, you know, that's her thing. But she really truly wants other people to feel that way about themselves as well, and want them to, you know, just be their true authentic selves and live their lives. So it was just, incredible. So not only did we get to learn amazing things about Disney, but we had, it felt like I was at a like motivational speaker thing, because I was just so inspired after hearing her talk, and I was just, it was amazing.
And she never, when she was later like out and about and stuff, which we'll talk about a little bit later, she gave a ton of her time to people. She wouldn't cut anybody off. Nope. She'd listen to their story. She would tell a bunch of stories. I never felt that she was in a hurry to go anywhere. Mm-hmm. Like, obviously her time is important. We should respect her time too. But she was very generous with her time. She came around at the dinner, which we'll talk about later. She came around and went to everybody's table. Mm-hmm. She didn't eat.
She took the time to thank every individual for coming.
Yep.
Coming out to support her and to celebrate her. Yeah. And it was beyond words.
What an amazing person to be so humble like that. Mm-hmm. And you know, because some people, they get the entourage and you need to step back, but she was just so down to earth. And this whole experience was very much like that.
And, same thing with Bob Gurr, though, I felt. So Bob Gurr was up next. He came up. Parked his little vehicle to the side, and he kept, the vehicle was just to the left of Tag and I, and then he didn't go up on the stage at all.
No.
He wanted to be down and talk with all the people, with the attendees.
He didn't have a microphone either, I don't think.
No, I don't remember if he did or not. But so he was just, and it was the most casual presentation ever, which was awesome. It's Bob Gurr. He's talked so much about his career and so much about what he's done that, he just genuinely wanted to know what questions we had. And so his presentation was basically just an open forum. So it was really kind.
Was he the one that said, usually we do presentation and then Q&A after? And he's like, we're going to do Q&A first and I'll do a 6-minute presentation at the end.
And he said, usually it's a presentation and then you have 6 minutes left for Q&A. Yeah. However, we're flipping this. We're going to just do Q&A, and if there's time, I'll do the 6-minute presentation after. So he had slides and stuff going, and they just had it kind of on a loop.
Yeah.
So he'd talk about certain things, you know, whether if it was a specific design of an Autopia car or whatever. And then he'd all of a sudden see it and be like, oh, that was, pointed out.
He was so adorable of like, oh yeah, there it is.
Yep,
like,
yep. It was really incredible. But so he was just genuinely just wanted to know, what we wanted to know, and just tailored his presentation based on our questions.
And the people in the audience had amazing questions. It wasn't a lot of like normal-ish questions. It was great.
He did a good job in the beginning to kind of like challenge everyone to say, he was joking about his age and saying, I want you to stump me. I really want to like dig back and get my synapses firing up and, I really, that kind of stuff. So people had some very unique questions. It wasn't just, when did you start? Da, 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 da. So it was really cool. We got to learn a lot of things about Bob that we hadn't heard before.
So the only like generic question, but he didn't even answer it in a generic way, which was amazing, was they asked, what was it like, or how did you first meet Walt Disney, or basically what was that experience like? And he said, well, I never met him. And everybody's kind of like, what? And he was like, I got brought onto the studio because I was a car designer, and they wanted me to do this design for these Autopia cars. And so we were sitting there looking at it and everything. We walked over, and there was this gentleman. He had his foot up on the tire, like guys
and
did
it was
or whatever.
Like a circle of guys.
Yeah, so, and they're just hanging out, and his hair was messed up, and he didn't seem like whatever. And then he asked a couple questions, whatever, and he walked off, and he said, well, I didn't catch who that was. And they said, well, that was Walt. And he was like, oh. Like, so he said he never met Walt Disney because he just kind of was there. Yeah. And Walt, I guess, when working on all this, wasn't the polished Walt that we've always see with like the slicked back hair and the suit and everything. Apparently he was just kind of hanging out. His hair was just like, you wouldn't recognize. I mean, I could see that.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
So I thought it was great. He was a wonderful speaker as well. And again, so generous with his time and stories, as you would expect with somebody with such a storied history as Bob Gurr. He's a very good storyteller.
Yes.
Too.
Yes. I feel like they all had that in common, which, I mean,
of course,
when you
right?
take a step back, makes total sense, because Imagineers basically are storytellers in one sense or another. So it was just incredible. The other question that was actually asked by a Weekly Tier that I really enjoyed was she had asked Bob what opening day of Disneyland was like for him. Mm. We've all heard what opening day was like for Disneyland.
In general, yeah.
In general, we hear about how
the pavement, the pavement wasn't right,
and the water fountains, and the ladies' heels were sinking, and things were catching on fire, and there
gas leaks.
That's what it was, and kids were shoving each other out of the way, and like ripping each other out of the Autopia cars. You know, we've heard all that. Everyone knows that. So it was really interesting to hear. To hear what Bob's day was like and what his experience was and what it was like from his lens. I feel like I cannot do his story justice, but basically he ended up having to
babysit. Right?
Yeah, he was babysitting these two boys. And it was kind of all these weird shenanigans that they got into because of his like he got kind of told by Walt, like, oh, like, because Walt was taking busy. Someone around and said, oh, don't worry about the boys, Bobby will watch them. And then Bob's just like, me? Oh, okay. You know, so then he was trying to trying to entertain these two kids. But so yeah, there was a couple of shenanigans that they got into and whatever. So I thought that was so fun and such a different version of the opening day of Disneyland story than what we're all used to.
Yeah, totally. I also want to say that before he started anything, it was kind of funny because that's the very beginning of his presentation. He had a couple laminated poster boardy kind of things that had all the designs that he had done for the new scooter, and he talked for a few minutes about why he's involved in this, and he doesn't really do design work anymore, but this company was basically like, you're doing it, and all of that story that I kind of went through earlier. But it was just so kind of funny because I was like, oh, okay, this is interesting to start with.
I thought it was interesting because you could tell he was very excited and he was very passionate, and then that was when he was telling us about all of the time and research that he's done to figure out what it is to be riding an electronic convenience vehicle, what the vehicles themselves. I think he started out saying, I thought I knew everything about anything on wheels. Turns out I didn't. So this was kind of something that was new to him. So he just dove in, got himself an electronic convenience vehicle to then kind of almost like method acting. Like he just like dove right in and like wanted to really understand what the struggles were and what things could benefit and what, you know, what this, that, and the other. And I don't remember if he said that he actually went to one of the parks. I felt like he may have said Disney World because that's where the company is that he's designing these for. And so he experienced the park in one of these vehicles too, which totally different experience, you know. Even things like he was talking about how you pull up to watch a parade and you think you got this great spot, then suddenly all these people are standing in front of you and you can't move because there's a wall of people in front of you, and stuff like there was going to be like a drawer to lock your valuables in, because he said the other thing that he quickly learned was people don't want to carry all the junk that they're buying at Disneyland.
Hey, you got wheels.
Yeah, here, you've got wheels in a basket. You take care of this now, kind of a
And it was this tiny basket that's on the front.
So he was talking about, you know, how that was unsafe, because if you got too much weight on it, then it's tippy. I mean, it was fascinating.
Yeah.
I was just very, it was so cool watching him talk about how he's doing this, why he's doing certain things, and just, I mean,
his process, basically.
I mean, simple things like when he said something like, well, you put too much weight in the basket and that's dangerous because then it's, you know, you could, you know, it's more heavy in the front. I was like, well, that makes total sense. Why is that? You know, like, as soon as he said that, I'm like, oh, well, yeah. So it was just, it was really interesting. He was talking about cup holders, this and that and the other. And it was just so cool to kind of get a peek inside of his design thought process in his design world, and that was just something that I'll cherish probably forever, because who would ever think in a million years that Bob Gurr is still designing things at 91, which is incredible, but B, that you could get a peek behind the curtain and see the process.
And I did not know this, and I'm sure some Weekly Cheers are gonna like smack me through their whatever they're listening to the podcast on, but I didn't know that he was basically like fired from the company, because when Walt passed, they, you know, things got more corporate. And so he never had like he was never like a certified engineer. He was a designer. And so because of legal reasons and stuff, he couldn't like certify the stuff he was designing. And they kind of, but it's like, it's Bob Gurr. He created all these things.
I know.
So it kind of sucks that corporate red tape and stuff ended up being. So he still consults for them, but everything has to go through an engineer that is certified and whatever. So, you know, all their check marks
all the boxes
can be boxed.
Are checked.
Yeah. But I was just so surprised because honestly, I thought he just retired from being an Imagineer. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize that he was fired. And he's worked on so. I did not know that he worked on King Kong for Universal. Mm-hmm. Like, how freaking cool is that?
So after he and Disney parted ways, he started his own company, basically. Yeah. And that's when he was doing all the other design work for other parks and such. So it just what, I mean, what a person. What an incredible story. Just, again, and he was so kind, so down to earth. Mm-hmm. He hung out the entire day. He was there from the beginning of the he was there before we got there.
Right.
He hung around after all the presentations.
After the dinner, at the end of the night.
You know, he was, and like hung around because there was a break in between the presentations in the morning and then the dinner in the evening. He hung around that entire time and was just, had no, you know, like just sitting there chilling, you know.
I did enjoy that during the break, we were sitting in like the lobby area getting ready. We were trying to figure out lunch for sure. Mm-hmm. And like outside the door, there goes Bob on the scooter.
Yeah. He was so funny because he was showing off the turning radius. So he was doing donuts in the lobby and all sorts. I mean, just full of joy and
was
just having so much fun. It was
just
great.
He was living his best life. Yeah. And you know what? Good for him. He deserves it. Mm-hmm. Now, Bob Gurr actually led into the next person that they have, which is Garner Holt. Now, some of you may not know who Garner Holt is. He owns Garner Holt Productions.
Yes. So Garner is actually the only person that had a presentation that actually never worked for Disney, was never technically a Disney Imagineer. But I think that worked out to his favor because
he's got such cool stuff.
Amazing. Garner, like his company, Garner Holt Productions, is like real life Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory or something. It was just incredible.
So Garner Holt was a precocious little young person.
I can't believe his story.
So he started in his basement. At 14, he had garage at 14, I think it was.
Yeah, in middle school.
In middle school, he put a sign on the garage that said Garner Holt Productions and did all this stuff. Well, think about this. Back in the day, you could look people up in the phone book. So you know what he did? He looked up Bob Gurr.
You're getting ahead of yourself.
I don't care.
14.
Like,
yeah, he once.
But that's kind of what got him in the door at Disney.
Yep, down the road, later down the road, he just looked Bob Gurr up and because he needed something, and so that's how those two, they're friends. They work together. Bob consults with a lot of stuff for Garner, and I mean, it's just so cool. But so Garner's start, like Tag was mentioning, started in his garage, and basically he went. His parents took him to Disneyland, and he was joking like, I don't think, you know, they regretted it ever since because it just sparked something in him. And he just had this desire and passion to basically, he wanted to be someone that builds things for Disneyland.
Mm-hmm.
Spoiler alert, that's exactly what he does today. But so he went home, made himself Garner Holt Productions, slapped his sign on the side of the garage and just started tinkering away. And he had, his first thing was a haunted house. Mm-hmm. And so he made this haunted house, and I want to say it took up his entire backyard. And he was so excited about this. He rode his bicycle down to the local newspaper because he wanted to tell people about his haunted house. And so he slapped his allowance money down on the counter and said, I want to buy an ad. And I guess there was a reporter that overheard this and was like, what is this kid doing? And so he was talking with the reporter about it. The reporter agreed to come down, see the haunted house, did this amazing article write up. And I think he said that there was like 400 people that showed up to his house on Halloween because they were so excited for his haunted house.
And then people wanted to buy his haunted house.
And then, fast forward, one of the questions that another Weekly Tier had asked was, hey, when was the first time you got paid for one of your creations that you thought, I can do this. I can actually make a career out of this. I can make money out of this. This can be my life. And he said it was in middle school. Mm-hmm. He, after that initial haunted house, he got called down to the principal's office, which he joked wasn't necessarily shocking. Like, it wasn't something that never happened. Haha. Mm-hmm. So anyways, he got called down to the principal's office because a local mall was calling to talk to him and they wanted him to build them a haunted house. So he made his first business deal in the principal's office and contracted to build this haunted house for a local mall, and then I somehow, then it became a couple of local malls, and it just kind of grew from there. And I was just like,
what an amazing story.
I'm like sitting there, I'm like, that's incredible. What am I doing with my life?
Yeah, right?
Like, holy
cow. You know what? You know what's amazing that I think, you know, we talk about how inspiring all these people are. It's inspiring that he saw something he wanted and he just made it happen.
Like Terry said, when the door opens, you just go through.
Figure it out later.
And you're going to figure, you will figure it out. Don't doubt yourself. You will do it.
Now, I did not know this in researching him with all of this. And he talked about it in his presentation. He built Murphy, his company.
He did. He built a ton of the animatronics at Disneyland that we all know and love. I was joking to Tag. I think it was that evening. I said, Tag, it's kind of like the stretching room portraits when you finally have that realization that these aren't the same. What, like, they're not the, of course they're not the original,
right.
But like, you just believe that these are the original. And so it was interesting. I'm like, Disney? Disney didn't build Murphy? Disney didn't build this, that, and the other? I was like questioning everything. I was like, what are they, you know, obviously they do build stuff, but like, so for example, in The Little Mermaid, Garner Holt Productions built the scuttles and built the Sebastians, but like Ariel and Ursula was built by Disney. So they just kind of contract out some of this stuff. Now, Garner Holt Productions does do full attractions for other companies. I want to say like Knott's Berry Farm, they actually design the full attraction. But for Disney, it's mostly just bits here and there, but tons of bits here and there. They've done different parade floats, like for the Disney Pixar Play Parade, the Monsters Inc. float that has all of the doors and everything. That was Garner Holt Productions. The list just goes on and on and on.
Well, he showed off, to start his presentation, this video of, it's kind of like their pitch video to people who want to contract them to do stuff. And it was amazing because they just moved in this new building in the last couple years. It's this massive warehouse where they build all this amazing stuff.
Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Exactly. And he rides around on his little bicycle because he's like, you know, it's a big place. I got to get from thing to thing. And so they have a bunch of video of him like riding around on his bicycle between different things. And it's just so amazing that he started in his garage and did all this stuff. And then he's got this huge warehouse now. It's like their third different location, I think it was. And it just keeps getting bigger and bigger. And how they've worked on so many different projects. And he worked, like Teresa said, worked with Bob Gurr on a bunch of projects and stuff like that. And just, it sounds to me from his presentation and talking, I don't remember exactly when he said this because he had a couple times. They also had a Q&A with Bob Gurr and him later that was separate. And he was talking about how like Disney will kind of do the numbers and be like, okay, can we do it in-house or is it kind of complicated or it's going to take a lot of resources and it might be cheaper just to outsource it? And that's when Garner Holt kind of gets involved. There was a question that I want to share with everybody that I think is hilarious. They asked about what they're like, have they worked on anything for Galaxy's Edge? And he kind of turned around. There was like their vice president person back there who, you know, was kind of the keep your mouth closed person. So he got a little, he kind of deflected and moved on to the next question. But
so of course that got our brains going,
right?
Like, ooh.
So, but it's like, how cool would it be? Basically, this guy runs an Imagineering shop, but he's not official Disney, but he's doing all the same stuff Imagineering does. So cool.
It is. His story, incredible.
I just boggles my mind that he just had the gumption to just, he's like, I'm going to make it happen.
Well, and he, and it's not all, you know, it wasn't, you know, we built these mall haunted houses and poof, next Disney.
No.
You know, he was talking about the struggle and there was quite a few years that he was living in his workshop,
right,
sleeping in a sleeping bag on the floor kind of thing. And so it took a lot of hard work and a lot of dedication. I think that's the other thing that's also amazing is when you see that, A, he started at such a young age, but that he just kept with it and kept with it and kept with it and didn't give up on his dreams. And now he's got this just incredible company and business that does all sorts of cool things. Like, we're on his website right now. He did Oogie Boogie. He did Oogie Boogie in the Haunted Mansion Holiday. He did Jack for the Haunted Mansion Holiday. And he did Sally in the Haunted Mansion Holiday, just to name a few. But it's just incredible. Just absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
But, I mean, tons and tons of hard work. I don't even want to know how many hours he probably puts in every week or has been putting in every week. I'm sure now might not be as much as it had been. But it's just just insane. One of his first big contracts, I think, was actually with Chuck E. Cheese. He did all of the animatronics for Chuck E. Cheese. Yeah. Is one of his first like major big contracts, which was interesting. So of course it's not all Disney. Like I mentioned, he does do stuff for Knott's Berry Farm. Yeah. And he mentioned some other places that were overseas theme parks.
I also want to mention, so we talked about Terry earlier. Mm-hmm. And how she really is trying to help a lot of people and through her yeah. Patreon and everything. Well, Garner Hill Productions has this whole education through imagination mm-hmm. Program where he brings in groups of young people who are yeah. interested in this stuff and gives them tours. Yeah. And one of the cool things is he was saying was that, especially closer to when they first started, he never said no to a tour. If somebody wanted to do a tour, he would do it. So now he's doing all this stuff with education. Mm-hmm. He's doing group tours. So they're going to have one in September.
Yeah, he was talking about
year.
How they're going to have an open house because yeah. this new warehouse and design space that they have now, they've only been in it for 3 years. Mm-hmm. So they came in and then not long after they came in, COVID. And so they haven't ever had an official open house yet. So they're planning an open house. I want to say maybe that was in September.
Yeah.
But yeah, just incredible. He's very, very open. Because you think about these things, this is how I think of the Disney archives, is like, you think that all this stuff happens in some secret off-the-grid warehouse that you're never going to find out about and exists. And for good reason, you may not find out about, because they don't want people, right, to know and break in and have issues.
Yep.
Totally get that. They don't want people peeking behind the curtains. We have issues with people like Tag and I taking photos through like the cracks in like the construction walls because we're just so curious and we just want to know more. We may or may not have tried to figure out what was going on. Well, we talked about this last week with the Pirates Cube because yep. what is happening? And same thing with the treehouse. Everybody's like staring at the treehouse, trying to look between the scrims, trying to figure out
yep.
what are you doing? So we're just so excited about all this stuff. So, I mean, this is just incredible.
If you go to his website, we'll have a link to the show notes. There's a virtual tour of his company's facility, and it's just so amazing how they do some of this stuff. And they're at the cutting edge of technology. It's just.
I
so
tell
amazing.
You what, after watching his like promo video thing and seeing the workspace and all that, all I thought was, I wanted, like, I don't even know how to do any of these things. What do I need to do to like be a person that can work and create, like, how magical and amazing would that be to like
right.
build and create animatronics that so many people that fall in love with and enjoy throughout all time? It's just so cool. Oh, the other thing that he was involved in, and of course, again, big Disney fan, Garner Holt. So he did not take these lightly that he got to be part of Haunted Mansion Holiday because, right, classic attraction. He also had a hand in the update to Small World. And so mm-hmm. he did the Disney character. I don't know if he did all of them, but he helped with the new Disney character dolls that are in Small World. So I thought that was really, really fun, too.
I also wanted to say that what I found really funny about this man was he doesn't like computers. Mm-mm. Computers and him mm-hmm. just don't get along. But I told Teresa, I said, you know what's amazing? I'll bet you if you gave him something mechanical,
oh, yeah.
he could whiz bang it all together and it'd be the most amazing thing you ever saw. But when it comes to computers, he's just like, not my thing. Give me some physical things to work with and we can make it happen. So I want to try to find, he played this video and I want to try to find it. I wonder almost.
Oh, I had a TED Talk.
I almost wonder if I sent them an email, if I could get a copy of it, because so amazing, yeah, so maybe. Amazing.
It was just incredible. It was just so cool to just be sponges and just soak in all of the stories and all of the incredible things these people were sharing about their lives, their experiences, and the cool things that they got to do and yeah. continue to be able to do, and how, I mean, every day they're making magic, you know, whether it's doing things like designing an electronic convenience vehicle that's going to be more user-friendly and have things like built-in fans, built-in cup holders, just make that experience more enjoyable to those users, to creating things like Murphy that gets to light the rivers of America on fire. I mean, like, just amazing. Absolutely amazing. To also creating other real life dragons that just live under the castle in Paris is just like, the more that we talk about this and the more that we're living it, I'm still like having to pinch myself that
right.
that we got to go do this and meet these really, really incredible, amazing, very kind, very down to earth people.
And the thing with all of them is they were so good at telling stories. Mm-hmm. Like, I sometimes when you watch somebody speak, even if it's something you're interested in, you kind of get to the point where you're like, okay, like, I'd like to get up, I'd like to go use the restroom, whatever. They actually went long, and none of us seemed to really care.
Nope. I could have sat there all day.
Yep. Well, and the Disneyana folks were like, okay, they've got to flip the room over for the dinner tonight, so we need to kind of wrap it up here, but you could talk to them more, you know, we're going to talk a little bit more with them that night or whatever, so...
It was fun. So we did have the break. So after there was a kind of Q&A session with Garner and Bob, we did break for lunch. Very quickly, because it's not nearly as exciting as our day at Disneyana, we decided to Uber back over, grab Blaze for lunch because we hadn't gotten Blaze yet. We still had some time to kill, so we decided to walk through downtown Disney. We got to check out the Obi-Wan sand sculpture that's
really cool.
Down by the trading post. Mm-hmm. The other thing, too... Sports is not our thing, but we had to take the opportunity. The Stanley Cup was at Downtown Disney during this time, and we gazed at it from afar. Should I throw you under the bus, or should I?
You could throw me under the bus.
So I did have to laugh because when we were walking up to it and trying to figure out exactly where it was, we were talking about the Stanley Cup, and Higgs like, "What is that for again?" I'm like, "It's like this big trophy. It's like, you know, really important for sports." And he's like, "What sport is it for?" I was like, "Are you kidding right now? It's hockey." I'm like, "Why do I know this and you don't?" So anyways, we were joking about it, but it was super, super fun. And then what did you say it looked like?
It looked like a fondue pot.
I mean, it does. It's giant, though. I mean, it was on a stand, but even without it being on a stand.
It looks like a fondue pot.
It was very, very large. So that was cool. That was only in Downtown Disney
for like two days,
Friday and Saturday. So we did gaze at it from afar.
Speaking, because we went over by the ESPN building, we saw the electrical parade mural. I did want to use this opportunity really quick. We had a weekly tier email in, or a listener email in, and said that we talk about the unused ESPN building all the time. Jeff, who sent this email in, was actually there during spring break, and they use it for a recording studio for part of the Imagination Campus program.
As soon as I read this email from Jeff, and Jeff did a really wonderful job explaining, you know, what exactly, you know, the different recording studios and all this cool stuff that happens in that building that's kind of, you know, quote unquote, backstage for us normal park goer people.
Right.
This made total sense to me because as we learned from previous interviews with other people that have done some of the music programs at Disney, this space has always existed at the parks. However, do you remember where it existed before?
Like behind where Toontown. Galaxy's Edge and where the Runaway Railway is going to be now.
It was behind Toontown. So it makes total sense that they've now shifted it because its original building probably doesn't exist. The original building it was housed in that was backstage behind Toontown probably doesn't exist anymore. So they had to shift it over and they were just using their resources. They had this big empty building that was the ESPN zone. So yeah, I thought that was so cool.
Yeah.
So yeah, so that was our, then we wandered around the Disneyland Hotel for a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then decided it was time to head back because it was almost time for the awards dinner. So the other fun thing that we had to do in between the break, or, you know, in between the two parts of the day, was Disneyana gave everyone this, man, I thought weekly trivia on Deal Weekly was challenging. I don't even know what level I'll put their trivia at, because holy cow, that was a whole different level. Thankfully, it was participation only. They did not grade you, but they did have prizes for people that wanted to participate in trivia. So you had to turn those back in. So we sat at a table and tried to struggle through it.
You're right. They were not messing around.
Oh man, they were not. Yeah. It was brutal. We were joking. We're like, the producers can't ever see this. It was, but it wasn't just park specific. It was, you know, anything,
Disney,
everything Disney was on the table for it. So that was really fun. Then it was time for dinner. They flipped the room over. at the beginning of the day when we first signed in, you could actually sign up for tables. So you could say, hey, I want to sit. We decided on table 3. They also were very open and upfront that said, the table numbers are just going to be assigned at random, so don't think table number 1 means you're going to be at the front. You know, it could be in the middle. They just kind of place it wherever. Well, we signed up for table 3 just because that happened to be. But it actually did. It worked out well. It was towards the front for us.
Yeah.
So we signed up. We actually had mostly weekly tier table, and then we had made a couple new Disneyana friends that we sat with as well, which was really fun. Dinner was great, though. Like Tag mentioned earlier, Terry, who was getting presented an award that evening, went around to each individual table, chatted with everyone, thanked everyone for being there, told different stories and whatever, and just had fun, and then, you know, continued on. And I felt bad because I looked over at her table and realized she hasn't gone back to her table to eat. So they actually had boxed all of her food up for her. But I just thought that was really, you know, incredible that she took the time to come thank us for being there. And it was us that were all like, we're just excited to be here. And like, you know, so that was really, really cool.
Yeah. So they presented her with the award. They also played, because they've inducted a lot of people into their own Legends ceremony. And so they played a thing that showed all the different people that they had done over the year. They also had like an in memoriam, like who they've lost and stuff. And so that was kind of crazy to see all the different people who've made such an impact with the Disney company and Disneyana through that. So that was really beautiful
as well. And Disneyana has been doing their Disneyana Legend Award longer than D23 has.
Right.
And actually the Disneyana fan club also predates the D23 fan club too. So it's been around since the 80s, 1984. So they've been around for quite a while.
Yeah.
So they have, and I want to say they induct, you know.
Started in 1993, the Legends Awards.
Oh, there you go. And they induct, you know, it's not just one person a year. It can be multiple a year. But the whole thing that, you know, the whole reasoning behind Disneyana and their whole
reason for being
is they are a nonprofit organization, but they're dedicated to preserving and also sharing the legacy of Walt Disney. So their legends are not just people that specifically worked for Disney. Gardner Holt is actually one of their legends, but they, you know, they that have some tie in preserving and sharing the legacy of Walt, some way that they're plussing,
sure,
you know, everyone else's experience of the company. So I think that's really cool, really special. They had, you know, they had people that were in their legends list that were previous Mouseketeers, or, you know, maybe they were some sort of vice president or something in the company that maybe normal guests would have never heard of, you know. And then, of course, all sorts of different Imagineers, animators. I mean, nothing was off the table as to who they were presenting these awards to.
No.
It was very cool. So then they did an interview with Terry on stage. One of the board members for the Disneyana fan club acted as, you know, the questionnaire, and he had all these fun questions about, you know, and asked her about her history with the company and her, I don't remember who it was.
I saw it on another page. I'm trying to figure out what it was. Paul, I think it was Paul.
Oh, yeah. So the Legends chair, Paul, was the one that conducted this interview. And it was, you know, asking Terry all sorts of different questions. And it was really interesting because, you know, she kind of, there's a couple of questions that sort of went along with, that had answers that sort of went along with things that she'd already gone over at the presentations. But it was very apparent that more people were present for the dinner than were present for the presentations in the morning for, you know, who knows what reasons. But so she did a really nice job of kind of catching the people up that hadn't been there in the morning, but then also expanding on that story so that it was also new information for those of us that were present in the morning.
They did a regular auction during dinner as well, which had some pretty cool things. They actually had, so all of the attendees got 2 postcards from that Terry Harden designed. Mm-hmm. One was, because I think the story was she couldn't figure out if she wanted to do color or black and white with these pen drawings or these ink drawings. And so she did both, and they printed them both.
Yep.
And then they auctioned off the original, which, wow.
Yeah, so what it was the original finished product was a watercolor of the Paris castle, but what everyone was gifted were prints, and it was stage 1 where it was just the black and white, mm-hmm. the pen ink drawing, and then stage two of it with the color. And it was funny because Terry said, I can't decide. I like both of these versions. Here, Disney Anna, you can figure out. And it was Terry's, apparently this isn't like a usual thing, but this was Terry's thank you gift again to all mm-hmm. the attendees for coming. And so she went to Disney Anna and said, here, you choose because I can't. And the Disney Anna board was like, yeah, we can't either because they're both beautiful. So they just printed them both out
yeah.
for everyone. And then Terry even invited everyone that was present, you know, hey, if you want, come see me. I'll be here after dinner or I'm going to be here at the sale tomorrow. I would be happy to autograph these for you, too. So we got our prints autographed by Terry.
Yep.
So that was really cool, too. But I want to say the highest thing that went that night was her original watercolor. I think that may have been the highest. Yeah. Highest thing sold at the auction, which was really cool. Another really interesting thing that they had at the auction was there was this big, nobody even really knew what it was, so we had to ask.
But it was like a dollhouse.
It looked like, yeah, it kind of looked like a dollhouse, but it was this big cabinet. And it was kind of, I don't want to say it was nondescript, but nothing about it just like screamed like Disney, Disney, Disney to anybody.
It looked like literally like a Barbie dollhouse, yeah. But tall and narrow.
And it wasn't like in brand new condition. It was just kind of like, what is this and how does it tie in?
And it was in the corner.
And why is it part of the live auction? Because this must be important since it's in the, anyways.
Yep.
So the story behind this piece was that it was actually on display in Disneyland on Main Street in one of the windows. So it was a Disneyland, a prop that was used at Disneyland on Main Street. So once you knew the story, that was pretty
sure.
cool. I was kind of laughing to myself. I'm like, I hope there's maybe something inside of it that explains that.
Yeah.
So that if the person that purchases it, you know, if something were to happen to that person, someone doesn't just like dump it off to Goodwill
right.
thinking, well, I don't know what this, you know, like hopefully doesn't accidentally get lost
sure.
to the Goodwill.
Lost to history.
Yeah, yeah. Well, kind of like, it reminds me of, what was that? Oh, Improp Culture, where they were talking about how Mary Poppins' carpet bag got, like, lost to the universe for quite a while.
It was in, like, somebody's attic
or
something.
And it was in someone's attic, yeah. So, I was just like, I hope there's something that explains what this is.
Right.
Because it wasn't very obvious what it was. But it is, you know, a kind of cool and important thing.
They raised a lot of money through their auction, which is really nice.
And again, all of the proceeds went back to the Disney Anna Club, which is really, really important.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. We hope to have the president of the Disney Anna Club on in the future. We did talk to her, and she said she'd be happy to, but we haven't worked out anything with her yet specifically. But this is like Teresa kept saying this the whole weekend when we were there, was this is just like the most little hidden gem, because mm-hmm. it's like they don't really publicize a lot of it. It's kind of like, if you know, you know.
Yeah. And so it was one of those things, and we'll ask her for confirmation, because I almost got the feeling that
feature,
maybe something that was, you know, intentional, and that might also be because it just seemed to me like the people that were there, Bob Gurr, Terry Harden, and Garner Holt, seemed like they were just so relaxed and just, you know, go with the flow. One of the quote unquote normal people, you know, I think they appreciated not being put up on a pedestal, whereas some other things they get more of the VIP treatment and they're not really able to kind of be around everyone because they just kind of get mobbed. So, you know, I think it's a balance. I think it's good that it's small, but we also want to, you know, help them grow. But mm-hmm. I can see that maybe they don't want to grow too big. They probably don't want to get to the level of what D23 is, just because that's massive. I think this was real, because this was so intimate. I think that's what made it so, so unique and so special.
I would say, I think we recommend, if this sounds interesting
100%.
To you, go online. We'll have the link in the show note. Become a member of the Disney Anna fan
club. It's only $20.
Yeah. And, you know, join there. They have a newsletter they send out and stuff like that. There's different, you know, like sections, you know, different
chapters. There's a Midwest chapter. We're going to have to look into that since we're now D23 members. But of course, there's different chapters throughout Southern California. California, there's a very active chapter. Where do they tell us? In like Portland or something?
Yeah.
So there's chapters across the U.S. for this. So you never know. There might be one in your backyard.
The next day, there's a Disney Anna show and sale, and we've decided that we're going to talk about that in a bonus episode for supporters. So that should be going live before the end of the month. So if you want to hear about our experience there and Teresa getting her name called unexpectedly.
I won a door prize.
Yeah, so go listen to that, and we can talk about that over there. So
dlweekly.net/support. You know, and we're not... How do I want to say it? The thing that was the most amazing of the entire weekend was Saturday, was the presentations and the dinner. That was just something that I never thought I'd be able to experience, that now I'm like, I'm sorry, when is the next meeting? Because I want to just fly out here for the weekend, because it was just so, so incredible and so much fun to be a part of. Everyone, like Tag said, from the president of Disneyana to the to the people that were there presenting, to the honorees for the awards, to just the people sitting near us at our table. Everyone was so kind, so welcoming. They didn't make us feel weird, because it was like, oh, you guys must be new. We don't remember seeing you here before. You know, they're just, everyone was very kind, very genuine, welcomed us with open arms. So much fun. I just wanted to like never leave. It was so cool. Mm-hmm. But so we're looking forward to the next event. I want to say they said the next event for them was going to be in October. So if the Disney stars line up, maybe we'll be back out again for that. Who knows? But we're just very excited. The sale, though, is open to the public. So everything we did on Saturday, also open to the public. It did have a little bit higher price tag to go with it, to be part of, you know, because it did have a dinner and it was a full day event. But the sale, also open to the public, less expensive. I want to say it was like for members, $5 at the door. And I think for non-members, it was $10 at the door to go in. They had another silent auction and two rooms full of stuff. Man, I tell you, it was like walking through, I don't even know what, like walking through a museum / the coolest store ever, because there were so many things that we got to see that I did not in a million years think that I was going to see, an entire case full of Disneyland ticket books. Like, such cool stuff.
Like, you're giving away the whole bonus episode over there, Teresa.
I don't want to make the regular listeners feel like they're missing out. So I want to give them a little bits of...
Sure. So check that out. Like I said, become a member of the Disneyana Fan Club, if for nothing else than to get their newsletter and to kind of keep up with some of the stuff, because we just, by happenstance, came across some of these things.
So, yeah, we... This was all told to us by Lynn from the Sweet Spot, was the first person that told us about this amazing event that was happening. And then we reached out to Stephanie because we remembered that Stephanie was a member of Disneyana, and kind of were picking Stephanie, one of our listeners' brains, about it too. It was just incredible.
Yeah.
So, so glad that we did it. Honestly exceeded my expectations.
Yeah. I'd highly recommend, whenever they have their next thing where they're doing legend stuff, totally go to it. Because if this, you know, I can't imagine that each person they put in isn't as charismatic and amazing of storytellers as these three were.
And same thing with the sale. Even if you're not a big, I mean, if you're a big collector, 100% go to the Disneyana sale, because there was so many different things to look at, to see, to buy. But even if you're not a collector, it was so cool just going, seeing all these different things, meeting all these different people. It was just incredible. I was like a kid in a candy shop. Tag was laughing at me because I think we made, I don't know how many different laps around I took to look at all the different stuff, because it was just, there was just so much and it was all so cool. Mm-hmm. Wonderful experience. 10 out of 10. Recommend.
Looks like we're coming in for a landing, gang. But please stay listening until trivia comes to a stop. And then yous can walk to the nearest exit. Thanks for listening to the 8th Wonder of the World. DL Weekly.
Welcome back to Trivia Land, where we're going to find out the answers to today's questions.
Because we weren't giving them.
Nope. Well, I'm just going to sip my at-home paradise soda and wait until this is all over.
You made an at-home paradise soda?
I did.
You didn't even offer me one.
No, I made it for myself for dinner, so I've been savoring this. We can make one maybe if we ask for nicely, he'll bring up one for you.
Oh.
I don't know the proportions. You'll have to make one.
Well, I eyeball the proportions, so...
Oh, I just watched you make one last night, so I can figure it out.
Oil of boil.
Yep.
One ounce to 8 ounces. It's no problem.
Dead man's toe.
Oh, who was a bartender? All right. So, let's find out how you did today.
How we did.
Yes. Let's find out how you did. Your first question from listener Louise from California. How many Disney and Pixar characters are located in It's a Small World, and what year were they added to the attraction? Tag said 17 in 2017. And Teresa counted up to 30 in 2018.
That sounds like you learned to count to 30 in 2018. Anyway, sorry.
The correct answer that I was looking for. After Small World went through its refurbishment in 2008, they then added 37 new characters. I would have also accepted 29 or 33. Teresa, I did give you credit because your 30 was darn close enough.
Wow.
Do you have the list?
2008.
See, this was a really hard one to research because I found three different sites, all of them verified sites that I have used for many other questions, and that's where I got 29, 33, and 37. So the list that I have is Peter Pan and Tinkerbell, Alice and the White Rabbit, Cinderella, Jacques and Gus, Pinocchio and Jiminy Cricket, Mulan and Mushu, Aladdin, Jasmine and Abu, Donald Duck, the Three Caballeros, Simba, Pumbaa and Timon, Ariel and Flounder, Dory and Nemo, Lilo and Stitch, Jessie Bullseye, and Woody.
So the only one I missed was Simba. Wait a minute, you only listed 30.
I said that's the list that was provided to me.
Oh, okay.
Huh. All right.
So wait, did I get partial credit for 30?
Yes,
then?
I gave you the partial credit.
Oh, sorry,
I said that
before.
I was
distracted.
You
so I gave
distracted?
The I made the magic carpet a character, but I forgot Simba. I'm sorry, Simba.
Poor Simba.
Your second question, submitted by listener Michelle M. While on the Disneyland train's Grand Circle tour, you pass by a little shed on your left that is selling shovels and other digging tools. What is the name of that shed? Your guesses were Stumped and Stump Shed. The correct answer that I was looking for was Nick's Picks.
Ooh, that's good.
And where is that at?
It is on the left.
But where?
It's by Frontierland. I've noticed it.
Okay.
Nick's Picks. That's fun.
Your third listener submitted question from Lori of All Enchanting Ears. What is Donald Duck's middle name? Teresa said Fauntleroy. And Tag replied, that one. The correct answer that I was looking for was Fauntleroy, a.k.a. that one.
Yay!
Specifically, we find that out from the draft card in Donald Gets Drafted.
Nice.
Do you want to know where I found it out from?
Where?
It was on, they had these glasses that I want to say you could get from McDonald's. Way back in the day, and it was a little fun fact on one of the glasses that I had.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I'm glad that you remembered that.
Mm-hmm. Came in handy.
And your fourth and final regular round question of tonight from listener Kayla B. In the Haunted Mansion, what is the name of the ghost band in the graveyard? To which Teresa said, the Phantom Five, and Tag reluctantly said, yeah, that one. And the correct answer that I was looking for was the Phantom Five, a.k.a. that one.
Vern was so nice to make me.
No kidding.
You're welcome.
Held a bubble wand to my head and said, you're choosing it.
Yes. You wanted that one, right?
Yes.
And your bonus question of tonight, related to the last, what instruments are they playing? You said a small harp, a horn, a flute, a bagpipe, and a xylophone made of bones. The correct answer that I was looking for was a small harp, a horn, a flute, a bagpipe, and a xylophone made of bones.
Woo!
With the tomb as a bass drum.
And that was like, oh, I'm so proud of us for that.
Yeah. Not bad.
Very well done on that one. So, listeners, how did you do listening at home? How do you feel about how Tag and Teresa did? Do you think you've got some great questions that are going to really stump them next week? If you've got the perfect question for that, feel free to send it in to us at trivia@dlweekly.net.
We will be back next week with more Disneyland news and information.
Until then, go out and enjoy the parks.
Please remain seated until the podcast comes to a complete stop and the doors have opened. Then collect your belongings, watch your head, and step carefully from the episode. On behalf of all of our crew, thanks for traveling with us. And we hope you have a happy and memorable visit here at DL Weekly.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.